Well, we have our study for today on this September 10th, 2023, 1859 hours Eastern Daylight Time. Ward Green with you again. We have a graph here. Sorry, a map. It's a map. It's not a graph. It's a, you know, it's a like charts, maps, graphs. They're all in the visual media area of graphical arts rather than writing. And here we see, in this map, we see the location of Noah's Ark, where it ended up when it actually landed somewhat north of this, and then it slid southward in a mudslide and ended up where it is now here. And it's on the border, on the Turkish side of the border between Turkey and Iran, right in this area here. It's in the Kurdish inhabited area. And we're going to look at our article, the Ark of Urartu, where that map is displayed there. It was a map made by the CIA, which I modified for some reason, probably just visibility, legibility. I didn't move anything. But oh, I added the Ark site, right, in purple. That's what I added. That's what I did to modify it. Okay. Now, we're doing today in the Ark of Urartu, chapter 1, paragraph 3, and together with that illustration, the survivors of the deluge had a use for firewood as well as wood to build houses. So it is natural that the wood of the Ark was used for both of these purposes and recycling. That wood that had saved their lives from the cataclysm of the deluge that wiped every living thing from off the face of all earth was thus used by them and by their offspring. Epiphanius, who died in 403 CE, wrote that the Ark remains existed in his day in the mountains of the Gordians, or the Kurds, or Kordians. Though in the 12th century, Benjamin of Tudela wrote that the Ark had been moved so as to build a mosque. Epiphanius was the bishop of Salamis, and he added that if one looked closely enough, one could yet in the 4th century see the altar that Noah had built in order to worship God. Sometime between the 4th century CE and the present day, it appears that the remains of the Ark were buried by mud flow and perhaps lava, based on the still existing mud flow that surrounds the Ark and on the nearby volcanic peak, Ararat. That the Ark location itself was known from ancient times and in the Kurdish mountains is witnessed to by Josephus. We're going to quote from Josephus. Let me get a drink of water before we begin. This is what Josephus wrote. He was born in 37 of the Common Era. He wrote, "Now all the writers of barbarian histories make mention of this flood and of this ark, among whom is Berosus the Chaldean. For when he is describing the circumstances of the flood, he goes on thus," quoting Berosus, "It is said there is still some part of this ship in Armenia at the mountain of the Chaldeans, and that some people carry off pieces of the bitumen, which they take away and use chiefly as amulets for the averting of mischiefs." That was from Josephus, writing in Antiquities of the Jews, 1.3.1. 3.6. Berosus wrote in the years approximately BCE 290 to BCE 278. Josephus lived from 37 to approximately 100 of the Common Era. That's the end of our study for today in the Ark of Urartu. How wonderful is it to know that we have the actual site where the Ark landed, or we're very nearby to where it landed, which is where the Ark rests even today. So, our proverb for today, little ones, Proverbs 12 and 7. There is an overthrowing of the wicked ones, and they are no more, but the very house of the righteous ones will keep standing. Deuteronomy, we're at Deuteronomy. Now this is the song that Moses delivered to the Israelites while they were on the east bank of the Jordan opposite Jericho and slightly north of the Salt Sea, or the Dead Sea as we also call it. Moses gave this expression. Here we go. Give ear, O heavens, and let me speak, and let the earth hear the sayings of my mouth. My instruction will drip as the rain, my saying will trickle as the dew, as gentle rains upon grass, and as copious showers upon vegetation. For I shall declare the name of Jehovah. Do you attribute greatness to our God? The rock perfect is his activity, for all his ways are justice. A God of faithfulness, with whom there is no injustice, righteous and upright is he. They have acted ruinously on their own part. They are not his children. The defect is their own. A generation crooked and twisted. Is it to Jehovah that you keep doing this way, O people? Stupid and not wise? Is he not your father who has produced you? He who made you and proceeded to give you stability? Remember the days of old. Consider the years back from generation to generation. Ask your father and he can tell you. Your old men and they can say it to you. When the Most High gave the nations an inheritance, when he parted the sons of Adam from one another, he proceeded to fix the boundary of the peoples with regard for the number of the sons of Israel. For Jehovah's share is his people. Jacob is the allotment that he inherits. He came to find him in a wilderness land and in an empty howling desert. He began to encircle him, to take care of him, to safeguard him as the pupil of his eye, just as an eagle stirs up its nest, hovers over its fledglings, spreads out its wings, takes them, carries them on its pinions. Jehovah alone kept leading him, and there was no foreign god along with him. He kept making him ride upon earth's high places, so that he ate the produce of the field, and he kept making him suck honey out of a crag, and oil out of a flinty rock. Butter of the herd and milk of the flock, together with the fat of rams and male sheep, the breed of Bashan, and he-goats, together with the kidney fat of wheat, and the blood of the grape you kept drinking as wine. When Jeshurun began to grow fat, then he kicked. You have grown fat. You have become thick. You have become gorged. So he forsook God who made him, and despised the rock of his salvation. They began inciting him to jealousy with strange gods. With detestable things they kept offending him. They went sacrificing to demons, not to God, gods whom they had not known. new ones who recently came in, with whom your forefathers were not acquainted. The rock who fathered you, you proceeded to forget, and you began to leave God out of memory. The one bringing you forth with childbirth pains. When Jehovah saw it, then he came to disrespect them because of the vexation his sons and his daughters gave. So he said, let me conceal my face from them. Let me see what their end will be afterward, for they are a generation of perverseness, sons in whom there is no faithfulness. They, for their part, have incited me to jealousy with what is no God. They have vexed me with their vain idols. And I, for my part, shall incite them to jealousy with what is no people. With a stupid nation I shall offend them. For a fire has been ignited in my anger, and it will burn down to Sheol, the lowest place. And it will consume the earth and its produce, and will set ablaze the foundations of mountains. I shall increase calamities upon them. My arrows I shall spend upon them. Exhausted from hunger, they will be, and eaten up by burning fever and bitter destruction. And the teeth of beasts I shall send upon them, with the venom of reptiles of the dust. Outdoors a sword will bereave them, and indoors fright of both young man and virgin, suckling together with gray-haired man. I should have said, I shall disperse them, I will make the mention of them cease from mortal men. Were it not that I was afraid of vexation from the enemy, that their adversaries might misconstrue it, that they might say, our hand has proved superior, and it was not Jehovah who worked all this out. For they are a nation on whom counsel perishes, and among them there is no understanding. Oh, that they were wise, that they would ponder over this, that they would consider their end afterward. How could one pursue 1,000, and 2 put 10,000 to flight? Not unless their rock had sold them, and Jehovah had surrendered them, for their rock is not like our rock, even our enemies being the ones to decide. For their vine is from the vine of Sodom, and from the terraces of Gomorrah. Their grapes are grapes of poison, their clusters are bitter. Their wine is the venom of big snakes and the cruel poison of cobras. Is it not laid up with me, with a seal affixed to it in my storehouse? Vengeance is mine, and retribution. At the appointed time their foot will move unsteadily, for the day of their disaster is near, and the events in readiness for them do make haste. For Jehovah will judge his people, and he will feel regret over his servants, because he will see that support has disappeared, and there is only a helpless and worthless one. And he will certainly say, where are their gods, the rock in whom they sought refuge, who used to eat the fat of their sacrifices, to drink the wine of their drink offerings? Let them get up and help you. Let them become a concealment place for you. See now that I am he, and there are no gods together with me. I put to death and I make alive. I have severely wounded and I will heal, and there is no one snatching out of my hand. For I raise my hand to heaven in an oath, and I do say, as I am alive to time indefinite, if I do indeed sharpen my glittering sword and my hand takes hold on judgment, I will pay back vengeance to my adversaries and render retribution to those who intensely hate me. I shall intoxicate my arrows with blood, while my sword will eat flesh with the blood of the slain and the captives, with the heads of the leaders of the enemy. Be glad, you nations, with his people, for he will avenge the blood of his servants, and he will pay back vengeance to his adversaries, and will indeed make atonement for the ground of his people. Thus Moses came and spoke all the words of this song in the hearing of the people, he and Hoshea, the son of Nun, also called Joshua. After Moses finished speaking all these words to all Israel, he went on to say to them, apply your hearts to all the words that I am speaking in warning to you today, that you may command your sons to take care to do all the words of this law, for it is no valueless word for you, but it means your life, and by this word you may lengthen your days upon the soil to which you are crossing the Jordan to take possession of it. And Jehovah proceeded to speak to Moses on this same day, saying, Go up into this mountain of Abarim, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, which fronts toward Jericho, and see the land of Canaan, which I am giving to the sons of Israel as a possession. Then die on the mountain into which you are going up, and be gathered to your people, just as Aaron your brother died on Mount Hor, and got to be gathered to his people. For the reason that you men acted undutifully toward me in the middle of the sons of Israel at the waters of Meribah of Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. For the reason that you men did not sanctify me in the middle of the sons of Israel. For from a distance you will see the land, but you will not go there into the land that I am giving to the sons of Israel. And that's the end of Deuteronomy chapter 32, little ones. Revelation, we have 17. Yes. And one, this is John speaking, relating the vision he saw in heaven that was given to him by the Lord Jesus. John said, And one of the seven angels that had the seven bowls came and spoke with me, saying, Come, I will show you the judgment upon the great harlot who sits on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth committed fornication, whereas those who inhabit the earth were made drunk with the wine of her fornication. And he carried me away in the power of the Spirit into a wilderness. And I caught sight of a woman sitting upon a scarlet-colored wild beast that was full of blasphemous names, and that had seven heads and ten horns. And the woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet, and was adorned with gold and precious stone and pearls, and had in her hand a golden cup that was full of disgusting things and the unclean things of her fornication. And upon her forehead was written a name, a mystery, Babylon the Great, the mother of the harlots, and of the disgusting things of the earth. And I saw that the woman was drunk with the blood of the holy ones and with the blood of the witnesses of Jesus. Well, on catching sight of her, I wondered with great wonderment. And so the angel said to me, Why is it you wondered? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the wild beast that is carrying her, and that has the seven heads and the ten horns. The wild beast that you saw was but is not, and yet is about to ascend out of the abyss, and is to go off into destruction. And when they see how the wild beast was but is not, and yet will be present, those who dwell on the earth will wonder admiringly, but their names have not been written upon the scroll of life from the founding of the world. Here is where the intelligence that has wisdom comes in. The seven heads means seven mountains, where the woman sits on top, and there are seven kings. Five have fallen. One is, the other has not yet arrived. But when he does arrive, he must remain a short while. And the wild beast that was but is not, it is also itself an eighth king, but springs from the seven, and it goes off into destruction. And the ten horns that you saw mean ten kings, who have not yet received a kingdom, but they do receive authority as kings 1 hour with the wild beast. These have one thought, and so they give their power and authority to the wild beast. These will battle with the Lamb, but because he is Lord of lords and King of kings, the Lamb will conquer them. Also, those called and chosen and faithful with him will do so. And he says to me, the waters that you saw where the harlot is sitting mean peoples and crowds and nations and tongues. And the ten horns that you saw and the wild beast, these will hate the harlot and will make her devastated and naked, and will eat up her fleshy parts, and will completely burn her with fire. For God put it into their hearts to carry out his thought, even to carry out their one thought by giving their kingdom to the wild beast, until the words of God will have been accomplished. And the woman whom you saw means the great city that has a kingdom over the kings of the earth. That's the end of Revelation 17. little children. And that concludes our Bible study for today. Perhaps we could do a little more preview of the Ark of Your article. Wow, there's so much to this story. There are the anchor stones that were found northwest of the Ark landing site. They're anchor stones because they have a hole for the rope to be tied to them. And that's just one of them. But these anchor stones were cut free from the Ark before the Ark landed, as is evident. But because they wouldn't serve any purpose anyway when coming onto land. So they would just serve to make the maneuvering more difficult. So that was the apparent reason why these stones were abandoned by the Ark. And they're quite large. They're very heavy. Just ordinary ropes, such as hemp rope, with the diameter equal to the hole size shown there, would be strong enough to hold those anchor stones in water, because they weigh less in water, of course, than they do in air. And we have a pitchfork, a remnant of a pitchfork from the area of Urartu, which has nothing to do with the Ark. It's just a an artifact from that land. So many different things. Here we have the Ark site. Look at this. It's called the Wall of Heaven. This is the Ark site, and it looks like a crown if you look at the top of this mountain, right? You see that the shape of it is like a crown at the top. And that crown may well have been what inspired Nimrod to make a crown for himself, because he would have been aware of this site where the Ark landed. The Ark was found in the lower regions, having slid down into this lower region somewhere here. I'm not sure if that's it. It's somewhere on this on this landscape here. It's where the Ark is, and up at the top is where it landed, near the top of the mountain, because the waters, of course, were only beginning to recede, and at that time the Ark would have been floating up near the top of this mountain. And here we have it. There's the Ark shown with the Wall of Heaven. There's the Ark site. And so when we look at this drawing, the Ark site is possibly not visible. I think we're looking at that instead of this arc here, the actual arc. So this region there was just behind the arc, in the background possibly. It looks like would correspond to these features there in this drawing here. But the arc is here. That's it. And you notice in the Bible, you can think of it this way. Ships are always built in a shape like this, where they're wider in the middle and they're narrower at the two ends. So when the book of Genesis that describes the dimensions of the ark mentions the width of the ark, it's talking about the beam width of a ship. The beam width of a ship, because there's no other shape that you can build for a ship that could withstand the stresses other than this ship form, the form that we know of as a ship shape, like this, the shape of the ship. And of course, this is just the remnant of the ark. There's none of the, evidently the roof is gone, and perhaps it was used for firewood. Evidently there are a lot of portions of the ark that could be missing here. So but the shape of it is very, very regular, and And there were a lot of measurements made to prove that it's the right size, according to the book of Genesis. And a lot of other things were done, such as radar scans to detect what was below the surface of the ground here. But the sides of the ark, you can see, oh, it's such an amazing picture. Look at it. Is that not amazing? Look at this. See the vertical members that look like originally they were wood, now they're petrified. But look at that. What an amazing photograph that is, showing also the wall of heaven above. And the wall of heaven was something that was written about by Gilgamesh. As Gilgamesh journeyed to this site, he is a legendary figure, but he was also a ruler, one of the ancient rulers of the lands of this area of, I believe he ruled somewhat south of this. This is fairly far north for Gilgamesh, but he moved in that, he traveled there to view this wall of heaven, and he was a ruler. He was a ruler of ancient times. In paragraph 1, chapter 1, paragraph 7 of this article that we're studying, he was a ruler who was mentioned in the Sumerian clay tablets called the Epic, the particular tablets called the Epic of Gilgamesh. And that is the oldest unsourced account of the deluge. It's older even than the Bible account, because we don't have documents going back that far from the Bible. Not yet. We may find them. But these clay tablets, they were able to survive because they were of clay. So they're the oldest account of the deluge. And it's quite remarkable what it says. In the Epic of Gilgamesh, the Ark is described as being one iku in area, which is compared to an acre in today's units of area. Now, if the great Babylonian cubit was 21 inches, which we apparently researched and found out about, and the iku given is 120 cubits square, then the deck area of the ark is calculated as 120. That's if it's 120 square. Like, that doesn't mean that it was square in shape, but its area was equal to 120 cubits square, if you understand. Okay, then the deck area of the ark is calculated as 120 times 21 times 20. Wait a minute, what's happened here? Yeah. I don't understand this calculation right now. Why is it 120 times 21 times 120 times 21? I'm thinking. Why? Oh, yeah, it's 120. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. So 120 cubits would be 120 times 21 in actual inches. And then the other dimension of that square is also 120 cubits, which is 120 times 21 inches. So when you multiply the two together, the length times the width, you get 6,350,400 square inches. And 1 square inch is, of course, 1 over 12 times 12 of a square foot, or 1 over 144, because each square foot is 12 inches by 12 inches. So it's 144 square inches, each square foot. So we have to divide by 144 to get it into square feet. And when we divide 6,350,400 by 144, we get 44,100 square feet. Now, the area at it was an iku, they said. The arc is described as being an iku, one iku in area, right? And the iku was 120 cubits square, 120 cubits by 120 cubits. That's what it was in terms of a square dimension. We just calculated that. But the acre at 66 by 660 feet is 98.7755% of the ancient iku. So we get the idea that that's exactly within, you know, easily within 2% of the actual same size as an iku or an acre. It's what it is. It was an acre. An acre in terms of all of, if you put little squares on the arc, even though it wasn't rectangular in shape, if you put all those little squares on there of 1 inch each or whatever, and you counted them all up, you'd get the right number of total squares, which would equal very closely to the number of square inches here in an iku, which is 6,350,400. That's how you could prove that it really is that size. And we can see that. The arc is in fact quite close to the modern acre when we calculate. There's a bit of work to study it and to take the length of the arc and, you know, show and the width of the beam and all these things and put all the squares in there to draw the arc up accurately and to do a calculation. You could do it in strips if you wanted to, strips of 1 inch wide and keep going in strips of 1 inch wide and calculate all the number of inches that each of those strips is in length and then add up all the total number that way too. There are many ways you can do it, but I did it somehow, and I did it without mentioning here how I did it. Gilgamesh gets the dimensions of the ark directly from its builder, who is said to be a deluge survivor. Okay. Oh, okay. Right. He's a deluge survivor. We know that Noah lived 350 years after the deluge from Genesis 9, verses 28 and 29. So that Gilgamesh evidently lived within 350 years after 3282 BCE, which is the time of the deluge. We are wise to be wary, though, of evidence based on myth. We may have dated the deluge, in the Bible we have reason to believe, as historical, but without a date, Gilgamesh may be a manifestation of mythical characters of various ages. There is a tale about the world's first king, Nimrod. It tells how he came to be the first to wear a crown when he saw in a vision a crown coming down from heaven, the story causing some to miss the idea that he had it manufactured. That's all for today. It's September 10th, 2023, 19:32 hours Eastern Daylight Time. I'm Ward Green. I hope you're doing very well. Hope everybody's doing fine and well. And this is Crow. And this is Cassie saying bye for now.